It's time for Wolo and Friends on Sports 56. Here is your host, the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
There we are. Welcome into Wolo and Friends. I'm Landon Schmidt filling in for Wolo today. He'll be back with us on Monday. But man, we've got something to talk about, and that something is the conclusion of round one in the NFL draft. Coming as no surprise to anyone in the existence of anyone ever, the number one pick in the NFL draft for the 2026 year, quarterback out of Indiana, is Fernando Mendoza, who is now a Las Vegas Raider. A lot of people would like to say that this was one of the worst kept secrets in the NFL, but I'm going to bring you in early here, Darian. Darian, my great friend and great producer who's always with me on Landon and Friends. I'm going to bring you in and ask you this question. Which was a worst-kept secret? Cam Ward from last year going number one, or Fernando Mendoza going number one this year to the Las Vegas Raiders?
I have three.
All right.
That's the first thing. Obviously, Mendoza.
Cam Ward was a sure thing, but
there was 100% no doubt with Mendoza.
I to a degree, I agree with you. I think both were really, really obvious. I mean, if you look back to last year, you had Cam Ward streaming on games and stuff like that, and people were asking him, you know, who's your top receivers, and he was like, Calvin Ridley, Treylon Burks, back when he was still a Titan. It was like, all right, bro, like, we get it. You're going to be a Titan. Like, day one comes around, let's go ahead and get Cam Ward his jersey, and then let's, you know, keep moving on. But it kind of had the same feel this year with Fernando Mendoza. So, to nobody's surprise, Fernando Mendoza goes number one. Nobody did not see that coming. But then it was picks two through basically number five where things started to really kind of heat up and get things going a little bit crazy. And number two, you had the New York Jets, who just need help everywhere. So there was a myriad of different places they were going. I think one of the hot names, especially for the people like us who are, living in Tennessee, kind of have a little bit of hometown loving for the Titans. Maybe not everybody, but at least, you know, it's Tennessee's team, no matter which way you want to draw it up. So there was a lot of talks around, where's Jeremiah Love going to go? Who's going to pick him up? Because as you started to get closer and closer to the NFL date, you started to hear that the Jets started to maybe peak a little bit of interest. You saw that the Cardinals were starting to get heavily interested in them as well. And of course, if he was still on the board, obviously, the Titans, I would have loved to have had Jeremiah Love be the one who was slated to be a Titan. So instead, the Jets go with David Bailey, which I think was a great move, the edge rusher out of Texas Tech. This dude is a beast. This dude is a monster. The guy is 6'3", 250 pounds, and he ran a 4.5 40-yard dash. Not only is this dude huge, not only is this dude mean, aggressive, tenacious, all of the right words that you want to hear from an edge rusher, the guy is quick. I mean, he can move. He can just throw you to the side. This is a great pickup for the Jets, who I'm not saying that Jermaine Johnson is just going to leave a huge hole now that he himself is a Titan, but you've got Tavondre Sweat, who's now a Jet on the inside, got a big body dude there, and this guy, I think he's going to immediately be a starter for this Jets team because they need all the help they can get regardless. So you could not go wrong getting David Bailey there. You literally could not go wrong. So then here I am. Last night, I'm sitting in Huey's hosting trivia, and we've got the NFL draft going, got a little bit of a crowd going, a lot of people wanting to see what's going to go on, and I sit there and I announce to everybody, I say, this pick, believe it or not, is the most important pick in the draft because it's going to dictate a lot of what the Titans are going to do. So in the back of my head, I think, okay, the Cardinals are sitting here. They just acquired Tyler Allgeier from the Falcons, who had a great season last year, is going to do really, really well. You've got James Conner. Sure, he's getting a little bit older, but he's still a hard runner. Not exactly trying to compare apples and oranges by saying James Conner is a Derrick Henry, who's also very old in the league, but he's still a good runner. So you have two running backs in your room already. But here's also where I was a little bit, I don't want to say hesitant, but I was a little bit worried because you think about all of the moves that the Titans have made to this point in the offseason, the amount of running backs that they've acquired. I believe they acquired two from free agency. I can't remember their names off the top of my head. But then you still have Tony Pollard. You still have Tyjae Spears. You still have Kalel Mullings from last year. And you still have Julius Chestnut. So overall, you've got a really deep running back room. I don't know what that means coming into the season. If you keep all those guys and there's just something about Brian Daboll's offense where you want to rotate as many players as you can to keep them fresh, keep the ground and pound attack, keep going, whatever that looks like. So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, look, the Cardinals also have a lot of needs. Obviously, they're a team that doesn't really, they don't have a quarterback right now. Jacoby Brissett is sitting on the side saying, hey, I need a new deal. Otherwise, I'm not coming back. I'm not doing this with you guys. We all know that Kyler Murray is now over in Minnesota. Congratulations to him. I think that's a great spot for him. Excited to see what he does with the new team and with a weapon like Justin Jefferson up there. So you've got no real leader of this team, but you do have that running back room. You do have a young Marvin Harrison. You do have Trey McBride. I mean, you've got some pieces there. There's still a lot of building up to do. So we're sitting there, and I'm going through these questions, hosting trivia, and then we see that the pick is in, and I halt all production. This may be, you know, maybe a lot of people shouldn't do this.
Boss man, halting production.
I halted. I said, we need a moment of silence right here because we're about to see the trajectory of this NFL draft change depending on what the Cardinals do. So then the camera pans over, and you see good old Jeremiah Love sitting there looking... looking big, looking fast, looking mean, looking like a fantastic man who's ready to tear it up in the NFL. And then the Cardinals call his name. He gets up. He's excited. Of course he should be excited. He's the second overall pick in the NFL draft. He's the one of two running backs. His buddy Jadarian Price goes as the last pick in the draft to the Seattle Seahawks. Definitely not going to replace Kenneth Walker, but a good pickup for them nonetheless. But then he starts walking up, and everybody in Huey's, myself included, we all go, dang it! This is ridiculous. I cannot believe that they stole our love. That love was supposed to come right to the heart of Nashville.
Because I could see
it. Because I could see it plain as day. You're talking, you're posting love all over the posters. You're posting them on the season tickets. You're posting them all over that new stadium. And I could just imagine and see all of the jersey sales with the Titans with that love name on the back and saying, man, the tradition continues as the Titans being the home of one of the greatest running backs, running back legacies of all time. Derrick Henry, Earl Campbell, Eddie George, Chris Johnson. I mean, you name them. There's been so many great running backs, but we just missed out on Jeremiah Love. So then we sit there and we're wondering, what on earth are the Titans going to do next? We just lost to Jeremiah Love. The next best guy would have been David Bailey. Well, he's off the board too. No David Bailey, he's a Jet. No Jeremiah Love, he's a Cardinal. So we're sitting there, and I'm announcing to everybody, we're like, you know what? This is a great opportunity. This is something fantastic. Arvell Reese is on the table. Arvell Reese, the big man, the big guy who is fast, who is mean, who is everything that you want in a defensive player. He's on the board. Arvell Reese is ripe for the taking. We can go out and we can get him because Robert Saleh has been very clear about how he likes to operate his defense, specifically that defensive line, is he likes to have a lot of weapons and he loves to have guys rotating in and out and in and out and having those superstar players on that defensive line so that his defensive line can stay mean, fast, and violent. And I'm thinking, man, I cannot believe that Arvell Reese is still there, that he's still ripe for the taking. But then what happens. The pick is in. And we're all holding our breath. Once again, I halt production. Sorry to all the people who were playing trivia. We stayed way longer than we should have because I was locked into the draft and I was locked in to see what the Titans were going to do. So then, good old Roger, he takes 10 plus light years to walk himself to the podium to have the pick his in. And with the fourth pick, the Tennessee Titans select Carnell Tate. He says Carnell Tate. And we all in unison go, are you kidding me? Really? Carnell Tate? My immediate reaction was, you had the perfect defensive player for your defense on the table, and you took Carnell Tate. But then, in my haste, I took a step back. I proceeded with the rest of the round of questions because I said, none of these teams mean anything to me anymore. I do not care what happens in this draft. That was a lie. I was still locked into all of it. But I started to think to myself. I started to think, okay, there's a lot of things that probably happened here. Of course, I'm not in the room. I don't know the whole idea of what their plan was in selecting Carnell Tate, but this is where I rest in the acquisition of Carnell Tate for the Tennessee Titans. What it shows to me is that, yes, one of my big worries coming into this draft was the fact that this team and the coaching staff for the Titans is very much defensive-oriented, which means Robert Saleh being the head coach and the guy who's going to be calling the shots on the defensive side of the ball, of course, wants as many defensive players as he can possibly get. But you look at what failed Robert Saleh, and you look at what failed Brian Daboll in the history. It was their lack of offensive production and offensive weapons. I think by acquiring Carnell Tate, what they're trying to go out there and show and prove to everybody is that they are still committed to helping out Cam Ward to the best of their abilities. Now, was Carnell Tate, is he going to be the guy that changes the tide, who's going to be that you know, superstar aspect of a great acquisition and wide receiver? I don't know. He hasn't played an NFL snap yet, so I'm not going to jump to conclusions. I'm not going to jump to the gun. But this is what the history of first round, especially high round picks in the first round of wide receivers look like. For the most part, they have not been very successful. But here are some names that came out of the first round. You go back all the way to 2004, the number 3 pick, Larry Fitzgerald.
No. I'm just responding to this. Is Carnell Tate better than...
No. But here's the other thing. We didn't think coming out of Pitt that Larry Fitzgerald was going to be the guy that he was going to be. Granted, I was 4 years old when that happened, so I don't even fully know. But you don't truly know until these guys actually go out there and play their NFL snap. So I'm just giving you the overall broad aspect of... Sometimes in the first round, I would say majority of the time, these guys have been a bust. But here have been the successful guys in recent memory who have been taken in the first round as a wide receiver. Larry Fitzgerald was number three in 2004. Then you go a few years later in 2007. One of the greatest wide receivers of all time, selected number 2 overall. Sorry, Raider fans, when you took Jamarcus Russell, when you could have had Calvin Johnson. Megatron, coming out of that draft, one of the greatest wide receivers of all time. Then you go back to 2003, number 3 pick in the draft again, Andre Johnson. Andre Johnson, really good wide receiver.
I mean, that
says a million words. Then you advance down to 2011, probably, if not the greatest wide receiver to come out of Alabama. You've got the number 6 pick in the draft in Julio Jones. That speaks for himself. And then the more recent one, pick number 5, 2021, Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, those have been, I believe, the anomalies of first-round picks. But if you look overall of the recent round number one wide receiver picks, like go to the 2017 draft. Corey Davis, selected by the Titans. His best year was 2020, and it wasn't even that stellar. Then he got traded to the Jets and just disappeared off the face of the planet. Look, great Western Michigan product coming out of Western Michigan. Go Broncos. But, I mean, nothing really more to say there. Seventh overall pick in that 2017 draft was Mike Williams. He had a fairly disappointing career. I think there's still some stuff in the tank, but not much. And then the ninth overall pick in the first round of the 2017 draft was John Ross. What all can you tell me about what John Ross has been doing recently?
He went to Washington.
Oh, good job. Good job, John Rice. Yeah. Way to go. You go back to the 2015 draft, Amari Cooper. I mean, yeah, he's good, and he's still kicking in the league. He's still a solid option, but he's never going. Nobody's
his prime right now.
Yes, and nobody's going to live up to what Julio Jones was coming out of Alabama. Julio Jones is going to be the best wide receiver that ever came out of Alabama. I don't think anybody else is going to touch that mantle. Amari Cooper, pretty good. But then you look at the seventh overall pick in the first round of the 2015 draft, Kevin White. Can you tell me anything about wide receiver Kevin White? I'll answer for you. No. And then pick number 14, you have Devontae Parker. He had a good year in him. Had a lot of hype around him, but he's just not really doing anything else. But then you look at 2014, here was another year that was an anomaly. So it's really what I'm doing by going through all of this is kind of telling you that it's a toss-up. Maybe Carnell Tate is going to be on the right side of history. Maybe Carnell Tate is going to be a flop. But real quick, so 2014, fourth overall pick in the first round was Sammy Watkins. He had himself a good season. He had a few good years under his belt, but now I think he's done for. There's not much happening else with Sammy Watkins. Seventh overall pick, he's definitely going to go down as one of the most elite wide receivers in the history of the NFL. That's Mike Evans with the seventh overall pick, and then in 2014, the 12th pick, of course, Odell Beckham, which he had his years, and then I think he just hopped too many times and has not found his home, so it's unfortunate. He is a phenomenal receiver. But basically, what I'm saying with all of this is that Carnell Tate is a good size. Carnell Tate has the speed. He has the hands, which is really what you need out of a wide receiver. Shockingly enough, you need good hands to be a good wide receiver.
But are you afraid that he was a number two on the other side of Jeremiah Smith? That therefore, all the attention was given to Jeremiah Smith. Now he gets the number one cornerback on him in the NFL, from the opposite team. Does that worry you, my good friend? It should.
Yeah, I mean it does, but what I started to kind of
because
think
Ridley
about
is not requiring double teams. He's not.
No,
not at this.
No,
not
no,
at
no,
this
no,
state.
No, no, no. And I think all of this still speaks to the state of where the Titans are at right now. I think an acquisition like this still speaks heavily to the fact that they are still in a rebuild and they're more focused on acquiring young talent, building up this team and building up team camaraderie to continue to progress going through the years. But I also thought Carnell Tate last year for the Ohio State Buckeyes, I mean, he had a pretty good season with Julian Sain, and Cam Ward is better than Julian Sain. So when you have an NFL-level talent in Cam Ward who's going to make strides coming into year two, I think that's going to be a lot better off than he was with Julian Sain. So I think he's going to have a pretty good rookie year. If you were to look at kind of how the starting positions are going to go on the offensive side of the ball, I think Carnell Tate's definitely going to be in the rotation of being that X receiver. On the other side, you're going to have Calvin Ridley. I mean, you've got him for one more year. Just utilize him for everything that he's worth. Utilize him for his veteran experience, his coaching, his teaching ability, whatever it is. Use him up and then promptly move on from him next year. So you're going to have Carnell Tate probably on the other side, sharing that with Elik Eomanner. And then you've got Wandale Robinson in the slot. So you've got weapons, you've got speedy guys, and more importantly, you've got young guys who are coming up and doing all that with Cam Ward. So I think you're definitely going to see strides from last season into this season. Are they going to be monumental? I'm not convinced yet, but once again, they haven't played in Carnell Tate hasn't played an NFL snap. Now, I'm going to advance to what the Titans did later on in the first round by trading up and getting another round one pick with that 31st pick from the Buffalo Bills. And they go ahead and select Keldrick Falk. Now, I've seen a lot of things about Keldrick Falk. The number one thing that I hear a lot of people describe him as is that he's long. He's a
That's where I want to help you out at.
Yeah.
So have you heard of this guy named Julius Peppers before?
I've heard of Julius Peppers.
Okay, that's where I'm going to make you feel very, very good. My comfort, Keldrick Falk, is Julius Peppers. Julius Peppers was 6'7", 300 pounds. Keldrick Falk was taken in the first round. He is the by far the largest edge rusher taken. He was He is 6'5", 276, yeah, and mobile. So if you like the likes of a Julius Peppers, I definitely think that Falk was made in that mold. Will he turn out to be Peppers, who was a Hall of Fame? Not quite sure, but I feel very, very good about them getting back into the first round and getting the largest and most mobile edge rusher that they could at that slot.
Yeah, he can kind of play both. He can play on the inside and he can play on the outside, kind of a utility player for that defensive line. But I don't know if you caught his immediate kind of Zoom call with Buck Rising, who I follow him. He's one of the radio voices up in Nashville, covers the Titans. But he was basically interviewing him and seeing, like, what was up, Keldrick? And Keldrick was he needs media training, but it was the answers he gave were interesting. He was asked, like, what was the process like? How was it, you know, getting that call? And he was like, well, the Titans didn't really talk to me leading up to this point, so I didn't really know about that. And he was like, and honestly, this whole NFL thing is all new to me. Like, I wasn't expecting any of this. I wasn't like, I don't know what to do with any of this. And he was just like, so what is it that's new? He's just like, I don't know, man. I just didn't really think about it, and I just don't really know much about what's going on here or anything like that. And everybody's just kind of like, well, dude, you're at the University of Auburn, SEC school. I mean, you kind of have to know what the NFL is and what the NFL is all about. Sure, they may not have communicated to you a whole lot, but you got to know something about it. But I don't know. I guess he was just deflecting. He was like saying, like, when his name got called, that all of his buddies and his family around him were crying, like how this was a big deal. And he was just like, I started crying because I saw that they were crying, and I could see how happy they were for me. I was like, dude, you just got picked in the first round of the NFL draft. That almost guarantees that you're an instant millionaire. I don't know. Maybe you'll look on how his contract goes. But when it comes to Keldrick Falk and where he kind of lines up for the Titans, especially in their starting lineup, I don't think right off the rip he's going to be a starter. I think right now what you're looking at is you're looking at Jeff Simmons paired up with Franklin Myers and Jermaine Johnson and Femi Oladejo. I think those are going to be your starting guys. And then likely your backups are going to have, you're going to have a lot of help with Solomon Thomas, Jaron Elliott, and Malik Herring. And then you go ahead and you add Keldrick Falk to that mix. So you've got names, you've got big guys, you've got strong guys in that position. So with the rotation and everything, look, I'm not, once again, he has not played a single NFL snap, but everything that you read about him is that he's basically the opposite of Reuben Bain. A lot of what Reuben Bain's problems were is that he had little T-Rex arms, and that's going to be a big deal because going from college to the NFL, believe it or not, is quite a huge leap because you're not playing against guys who are in their 20s anymore. You're playing against veterans who have been in the league for a long time and know what the heck they're doing. So being
playing
long,
next to a guy that has some pretty short arms too, Vita Vea, but look how awesome.
Well,
Vea is.
I mean, dude, look, you see the amount. Look, wearing my Defend Hawaii shirt on right now.
Hey,
did you
the Hawaii
see how,
guys that were drafted?
I was about
day,
to like, say the amount of the people, amount,
like not necessarily Hawaii University.
No, nobody from Hawaii University, but all the Polynesians who were selected. Oh my good! I mean, they were going back and forth and back and
it's
forth and back and
they
forth.
They were mostly offensive tackles. Did you notice that too?
Oh my goodness, dude! How could you not? These guys are ginormous. I mean, you got Spencer Fano out of Utah going to the Browns. You've got Francis Maui-Goa out of Miami going to the New York Jets.
You got Vega going to the Ravens.
Oh, come on now. You got to say his full name. You got to put some respect on that Penn State offensive guard. It's Olaiva Vega Ioani.
There you go.
Yeah, you remember my little tidbit on how to pronounce these Hawaiian names and these Polynesian names, right? You have to overemphasize every vowel that you see. So, Olaiva Vega Ioani. See, it's not that
difficult.
I like
saying Keldrick Falk.
Well, Kelly Jakov is not Polynesian, so.
Hey, I got that contract for you. That contract is 4 years, $16.4 million. He got $8.4 guaranteed in signing bonus.
Keldrick?
Speaking of Falk.
Keldrick? Wow.
That was that contract when you just you said
dang,
you contract.
Get your bag, brother. Man, that's huge. Well, he better live up to the hype because I'm going to be a little bit disappointed in him if he does not.
So before I get you to break, who was your big winner and your big loser last night? Because kind of sounds like a Tennessee Titans fan needs a hug over there. But omit your Titans unless you want
to. I mean, overall.
Who's your big winner and who's your big loser?
For the Titans, I would say I'm not disappointed in them. I think they were good enough moves, but I think they can make a lot.
I think you would have been happier if the roles were reversed if they went defense and then wide receiver on the back end, right?
Yes. To your point on that, I don't think really anybody else was targeting Carnell Tate that high. I think if you reverse those roles and you got yourself an Arvell Reese, there's a good chance Carnell Tate could have still been on the board.
Not
or
the you probably
maybe
got
not at like 30,
or
nothing
like
that. But you could have gotten a different wide receiver there. So,
or
I don't
Cooper.
Know.
Cooper, you know, towards the end.
You definitely could have. Man, I would have absolutely loved that. I don't know. My winner for
that
last...
That should be unanimous, right? The Jets.
I think so. I'll tell you this, though. Huge shout-out to Notre Dame, who only two running backs taken in the first round, and they're both your starting running backs in Jadarian Price
and
Jeremiah
Price
Love.
And I think Price does replace Kenneth Walker, though. I think you said earlier you can't... I mean, yeah, he was Super Bowl MVP, but you come
Super
to the
Bowl
first
MVP
round
versus a guy
reason.
Who's never
Kenneth
taken
Walker
an NFL
was
snap.
Not drafted in the first
Look,
round.
He's fast, he's strong, but that's
well,
going to be...
addressed it. Let me just say you addressed me, losing Kenneth Walker. How about it?
Yes, yes. I
agree. Don't say you totally get. I get where you're coming from.
I don't know. I don't know if I have a straight up winner. I guess if I was to give it to anybody, if you've got Francis Maui-Goa and Arvell Reese both going to the Giants, I think the Giants are ahead pretty far right now.
And can I say this for our good friend Brian Dacus? Last night, the Dallas Cowboys drafted Darren Woodson,
and I want to say that out loud. And they got Caleb Downs with the trade up.
No, Caleb Downs is their Darren Woodson. Hall of Fame from the 90s.
Yeah, that's
what I was meaning for Brian
Davis.
Yeah,
Davis. I got you.
And
I got
Eli.
You.
I think you guys got Darren Woodson last night.
And then you also got Malachi Lawrence from UCF in that. So, yeah, they absolutely did. And then one last tidbit. This is going to be something that's going to maybe make some people upset. I don't really know. So, of the 32 players picked in the first round, 10 of them came from the Big Ten. 7 came from the SEC. 6 from the Big 12, 6 from the ACC, 2 from Notre Dame, both of them running backs, and then 1 from the Mountain West. Shout out San Diego State, who got themselves a cornerback.
Oh, I love those numbers. I got some more to add with you. Last night, 19 offensive players drafted, 13 defensive. And who had the most draft picks? The AFC East, with a total of 6. And who had the fewest draft picks?
I don't know. You tell
the
me.
The NFC West. We only had 2.
Yeah, because your
AFC
49ers
South
traded away your first-round pick.
Yeah, your AFC South only had 3 with Tate, Rutledge, and Falk going.
It's okay. We had 2 additions, and that's more I can say than our rivals.
But I love it for the NFC West. We got Ty Simpson, who will sit on the bench, and we got Price, who you're not quite
oh
sure.
Oh, my goodness. Dude, there's so much to talk about. Why is there only an hour? Ty Simpson going to the Rams, you know what that tells me? Stetson Bennett's going to find a new home, and Jimmy G's probably retiring.
Oh, yeah, easily. Okay, thank you. I thought you were pushing Stafford out the door. By no means
oh,
do
no,
I think
no, absolutely not. No, you cannot get rid of
Don't
Stafford.
Don't you know McVay had to have a conversation with him? Did you hear about that?
To convince him to stay?
He let him know ahead of time. This is not to push you out, but this is for our well-being, the Rams' well-being, not necessarily you guys.
I mean, look,
so
I
don't
might,
treat them badly.
I might be in the minority, but I thought Stetson Bennett in the preseason was not bad. I thought he could hold his own. Certainly not a starter, but I think he can manage what he does out there. But anyways, we're really late for a break. We've got to switch up conversation and topic. Yeah, I guess. I'll talk to Johnny about it. But on the other side, we need to talk a lot of NBA. We're going to try to talk as much of it as we can because we've also got to talk some Tiger stuff with Jonah Dillon to wrap up the show. But don't go anywhere. On the other side, we're talking with Andy Schiffman. All things NBA. That comes your way next on Wolo and Friends.
Let Bryant Dacus and Brett Norsworthy take you home every afternoon. Sports Time on Sports 56. Weekdays from 3 to 6 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Your home is your best investment, so why not make it the best? Here is Radio Gaga. Radio Gaga. Radio Gaga. All we hear is Radio Gaga. Radio Gaga.
Welcome back into Wolo and Friends. Landon filling in for Wolo. He will be back with us coming this Monday. But one quick little tidbit before we get on with Andy Schiffman. Darian brought this up, and it was a great point. The Dolphins getting themselves an offensive tackle from Alabama in Caden Proctor. And if you recall the Georgia-Alabama game from last season, you also saw that Caden Proctor has got some hands. He caught himself a screen pass, and then he put on some moves, trucked a guy, stiff-armed a guy, looked everybody. I mean, the pick makes sense. I think what the Dolphins did was they found themselves a wide receiver number one for Malik Willis and Caden Proctor as the offensive tackle. Of course, that's being very sarcastic, but it should be a interesting pickup.
When you got a young guy, you got to protect him, and there were none better than Proctor.
You do, but also you need somebody for Malik Willis to throw to. And right now I would say that the Dolphins maybe have the worst wide receiver room in the NFL, if not one of the worst. But we can talk about all of that at another time. Right now we've got to switch up everything and talk about the NBA, as the NBA playoffs are going strong right now. And who better to do that with than our good friend Andy Schiffman, the agent from Priority Sports. So first off, Andy, good morning to you. And with the NBA playoffs in full swing, has there been any series that has been your personal favorite so far?
Morning, guys. Well, look, I've been really, attracted to the playoffs in general. They've been pretty intriguing so far. And outside of this OKC series, I mean, look, every series is competitive. Obviously, with Wimby going down the other night against Portland and them stealing a win there, I think the Celtics coming back to even the series against Boston is intriguing. The Lakers being up 2-0 on the Rockets. You know, obviously, Durant has been injured with this ankle injury, and he's been an unable performer at a high level and been unavailable for that matter. But I think for me, I've really been intrigued with this Denver-Minnesota series. I mean, the Timberwolves has kind of turned this series on its head, right? And no one expected Minnesota now to have a 2-1 lead while at home with a chance to go up 3-1 this weekend, when Denver has besides Aaron Gordon, a fully healthy squad. And they were terrific defensively last night. I mean, they absolutely contained and shut down Jokic. He just had a disastrous game, which you think about it, you look on paper, you say, wait a minute, he scored 27 points and grabbed 15 rebounds, but 27 points on 26 shots, that's not good for Nikola Jokic. And if you're exhausting that much energy on the offensive end just to barely squeak out 27 points in all those shots when the rest of the team, they're really shut down defensively, you've done your job if you're the defense in Minnesota. And, I mean, Ayo Dosunmu had a monster game off the bench for Minnesota last night, 25 points in a game where, look, Ant was great. He's had better games, but he still was great. But really, it was such a well-balanced offensive performance for Minnesota. I just really think defensively that really completely, you know, was the narrative of the game. I mean, they held Denver like 34% shooting from the floor. And you're not, I don't care who you are, how good you are, you're not going to win a playoff game if you're shooting 34% from the floor. So I've really been intrigued by that series. And the other one, too, is this out of the East, the New York-Atlanta series.
Yeah,
I got guys on both teams, so I've been really focused on those guys and those teams. And, again, like, you got two of the three games now really decided by, what, one or two points each time. And I thought New York was going to come back and win last night, and they didn't. So that's been really fun to watch.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the Nuggets because, you know, as is per use for me, that's kind of where I was going to steer the conversation anyways. But I know I'm going to sound like a broken record when I kind of bring this guy up and when I ask about this, but we did talk down the stretch of the conclusion of the regular season for the NBA about how the Nuggets have been underutilizing Jonas Valanciunas. And then you look at how this has kind of played out in the playoffs right now. And I think Jonas has totaled, what, 11 total minutes off the bench. I think he had eight in game number one.
Hadn't taken a shot.
Yeah, I hadn't taken a shot. So I think obviously, I'm not putting Jonas on a pedestal of the same as Jokic. I mean, there's a reason why Jokic is always in MVP, contendership. He's always in the conversation. I mean, he's a far better player. But do you think there's something going on where Jokic is just trying to do too much? I mean, he's been consistently playing 40 minutes. He's getting you 24 to 27 points per night. But to your point last night, on the amount of shots that he was taking, it just seemed that nothing was really happening for Jokic. But would him being able to breathe for more than 3 minutes in a game and actually allowing Jonas to play, is that something that's going to better help the Nuggets, or does Jokic just need to keep doing what he's doing?
I think, look, if you're looking at this long term, it absolutely could help the Nuggets to have more front court depth. And it's just not something that David Adelman has utilized for whatever reason. But look, I mean, you run the risk of just driving your superstar into the ground.
Yeah.
This is a tight series now. You have your back against the wall a little bit with, facing the prospect of going back to Denver being down 3-1 if you don't really get it together here for this game four in Minnesota. And with that being said, that means you're going to pour everything into Nikola Jokic, and you expect to get high productivity from him. And look, it's on his shoulders to go out there and lead them to a win, not to take away anything else from the rest of the supporting cast there, and Jamal Murray, Christian Brown. We have Tim Hardaway Jr. coming off the bench there.
Yeah.
But really, like, you can see on this roster, it's all Jokic. And Minnesota, as we talked about, as good as Anthony Edwards is, they're getting so much productivity from that supporting cast.
Yeah.
In Jade McDaniels, in Rudy Gobert, in DiVincenzo, in Io off the bench, Julius Randle. You just don't have that with Denver. And so, to avoid the risk of just, I think, physically burning Jokic out, I'd love to see Valanciunas be able to give you a little bit of a stretch in the rotation and spell Jokic for this game four to preserve his energy. Because I've watched enough of the Denver Nuggets this season now where you've seen that Jokic is just gassed at the end of the game. And, you've seen that here in the playoffs. And I don't care how good you are. Like, that's going to happen to anybody. And so, to your point, right, like, these first three games now, 40 minutes, 40 minutes, 35 minutes, and he's taken probably on average about 22, 23 shot attempts a game, and you're going up against the likes of Rudy Gobert that has a tendency to get under anybody's skin just with his presence, physically, obviously the shot-blocking ability. So, absolutely, unless the Nuggets just are so off Valanciunas and think that he's more of a liability out there than he is of an asset, I do think they would be better served going into game four to utilize him more, like, less about the productivity he can give you, more about the rest it provides for Jokic.
I absolutely agree with that. And I mean, if you look at the path that the Nuggets have to the NBA Finals, I would say that it's one of, if not the most difficult paths to it. So you're in a really good battle with the Minnesota Timberwolves, and right now it's shaping up that this series is going to go all the way to every single game. Then you go to the next game and you have the winner of the Spurs versus the Blazers. Likely Wimby's going to come back, and a lot of people are anticipating that the Spurs win that. So you're moving on from the Timberwolves to the Spurs, who is arguably one of the best teams coming out of the West right now. And then if you somehow get past that, which that series I could imagine would go all the way to all the games, then you have to go by and likely play the Thunder or whoever else is coming out of that side. Maybe the Lakers if they can somehow get past the Thunder. But that has got to be a brutal stretch. And if you're in a situation where the Nuggets are taking these series all the way to the max, you've got to find a way, like we're both saying, that you've got to at least rest Jokic to a point to where, he can breathe a little bit, he can recover, because that's a lot of basketball to play in such a short amount of time. But I mean, would you agree that that they probably have the hardest path to the NBA Finals of all the teams?
Yeah, I think so. Because again, you're talking about all the opponents you just talked about, right? They're very well balanced and they're elite level opponents. In the Spurs, potentially the Lakers, I would give Denver the edge there. And then for sure the Thunder, right?
Yeah.
But again, like these other teams we just talked about, they have three or four different players on any given night that can go out there and blow up and have a massive offensive performance, Minnesota included, just like we talked about. so far with Denver, you really haven't seen a lot of that. You're going to get that. You should get that from Jamal Murray.
Right.
But everything starts with Jokic. And for a guy like that with his size and capability, like, again, like he just has a tendency to get fatigued down the stretch. And he's very, very good. And sometimes his offensive skill set can kind of overpower the fatigue factor. But when you're in a 6-7 game series continuously in the playoffs, it starts to wear on you. And again, he's been around for a while now, right? Like he's not 21 years old.
Right.
So I agree with you. And I still think out of the West, it's going to be OKC. We'll see what happens with San Antonio. I was a little higher on Denver before this series. I thought they were going to win this series in 5 games. But Minnesota has impressed me, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, especially from last night's game, and especially from Rudy Gobert really just stepping up and doing what he's doing against Jokic has been quite something to see. But I mean, I think there's two sides of that coin. I think it's Rudy Gobert playing really, really well, and I think it's Jokic getting a little bit sloppy in these games. So I don't know, maybe it's both of those. But you did mention the Lakers. It's been out that Austin Reeves has been upgraded to questionable for their next game against the Rockets. It's been pretty surprising, I think, for a lot of people that the Lakers are up right now 2-0 against the Rockets, even though KD was missing in the first game. Came back in the second game, but LeBron has been managing very, very well. You've had some surprise showing up from Luke Kennard in that first game, and then even Marcus Smart stepping up and doing his thing. Do you foresee that success continuing for the Lakers, and do you see them taking the series from the Rockets?
Look, if you're getting the productivity you've gotten from a Kennard when you have LeBron on the floor, especially a Marcus Smart, like you saw the last couple of games, I think anything is possible, and you're doing all this without Luka, which is really impressive. And to know that now, you know, you've got this 2-0 lead, and, you know, even with Durant that last game, who now is questionable, I think they're in a great position. They really are. And so I think the Lakers can absolutely win this series. I think I thought it would be maybe a little closer before this series started. I was kind of having this as maybe 1-1.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think the Lakers can emerge out of this series and – you know, and really win the series in advance and make the next round competitive too, if you're going to get the productivity you've gotten from these other Lakers that you mentioned, especially now if you add Austin Reeves back into the mix. You know, they play tonight in Houston. That'll be interesting. But I think they could potentially come back to L.A. with a 3-1 lead out of these next couple of games and then end up winning the series.
Yeah, that would absolutely be huge for them. One last thing for you, Andy. In other news outside of the NBA playoffs, because I'm sure we could just talk all day about the NBA playoffs. We technically already have. But Taylor Jenkins is now set to be the new head coach for the Milwaukee Bucks. What do you make of that news?
Look, I think it's great. I talked with him yesterday after that news, and I'm really happy for him. And keep in mind, he was kind of in that system already and familiar with it, and I love Taylor as a coach. I think we can all agree he did a great job in Memphis growing the organization to the success that they've had in his stint. And Milwaukee now, look, they're in a similar position as the Grizzlies were when he took over, right? Like, they're obviously they've regressed a bit, and they have a lot of questions to answer with regards to Giannis. I still would be very surprised to see Giannis in a Bucks uniform come training camp this fall. But in terms of, like, building this team back into a playoff team and really a real contender in the East, which they still could be in the next couple of years, I think they picked the right man for the job. I've always been a fan of his, so I'm excited to see what he does. I think, again, he has a track record of working and developing with young players and building a core, and I think the Bucks can do that with the draft assets they have, and if they do end up moving Giannis, they're going to get value for him. So if they do move Giannis, I don't necessarily see them as a true contender this next year. But again, similar to how he built the Grizzlies and that blueprint, I think in the next 2 to 3 years, they could be right back as a top 4 or 5 team in the East. So I'm really happy for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with everything you said. I think it's an incredible opportunity. And to your point, this is kind of like Grizzlies 2.0 going on up in Milwaukee. They need a rebuild, and who better than the rebuilding coach in Taylor Jenkins? Well, Andy, as always, it is such a pleasure talking all things NBA with you. I believe if the schedule is reading correctly, Dave will be back with us next week, so you'll be talking with him. But as always, it's always so much fun talking with you. You have a good one.
All right, you too. Have a good weekend. Thanks again.
All right, and that is our man, Andy Schiffman, the agent from Priority Sports. He can talk NBA like nobody's business, and I'm sure he'll know more NBA than I'll ever forget in my life. No. That's not how that phrase goes. It's he'll forget more the NBA than I'll ever know in my life. Whatever.
Hey, don't worry. Just halt production and get it right.
We're stopping here, and we're going to take a break because on the other side, we've got to shift conversation once more and talk about all things Tigers and Tigers football, and who better to do that with the man that is Jonah Dillon, your commercial appeal beat writer for Tiger football. That all comes your way next.
Broadcasting from the Family Leisure Studio, we are Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now back to Wolo and Friends on Sports 56. Here once again is the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
Welcome back into Wolo and Friends as we continue on in our show. We've got a little bit of time left. I always feel bad about this because I feel like I talk so long and I never leave enough time to talk about things appropriately with Jonah Dillon. But we do cover a myriad of topics with this man who's got his feet in just about everything that is involved in the world of Memphis athletics. You can find him on Twitter and find all of this information at TheJonahDillon on Twitter and, or X, whichever one you want to call it. I don't know. I'm not trying to be all particular over here. But he is also your commercial appeal beat writer for your Tigers football team. But Jonah, first order of business. First, good morning to you. And also, did you catch any of the NBA, or not NBA, the NFL draft last night?
I did, yeah. I was about to say NBA draft. I think we got the playoffs. I did.
Not there
it was,
yet.
Top takeaway, it was a lot quicker than normally is. That move from 10 minutes to 8 minutes for every pick, I think it had a pretty big effect.
Yeah, I think that was a great move. I'm still a little bit perplexed if the entire world know, even if you weren't following football, everyone knew that Fernando Mendoza was going to be a Raider. I don't know why it took them 5 minutes to get that pick in, as though it was going to be some kind of surprise. But for the Titans in their selection in Carnell Tate, what did you make of the new wide receiver coming to Tennessee?
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. I mean, a lot of people kind of saying they didn't expect it, or maybe it was a reach. It's weird because Carnell Tate obviously is super talented and had so much success at Ohio State. But at the same time, everyone thinks about Ohio State receivers. You think about Jeremiah Smith over the past couple years, right? So it's kind of interesting because if you dive into the tape, you dive into the stats and everything, Carnell Tate is obviously a really good player. But I think in terms of perception, people are like, wait, you picked a receiver from Ohio State that high? And obviously Jeremiah Smith isn't in the draft. But it's just kind of a weird one with perception of how people feel about it because of what they know, especially if you didn't follow it super closely.
Yeah, and I'll go ahead and raise my hand. I'm a huge Titans fan, and watching the draft last night, I was very much taken aback when Arvell Reese was on the table and they decided to go with a Carnell Tate. But you know that the second round is coming up. Is there any local names coming out of Memphis that we should be on the lookout for that could potentially go in that second round?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Tigers, Travis Burke is the one guy who it seems like is going to get drafted. There's kind of a huge question about when that's going to happen, because if you look at the mock drafts and the projections, some people have them really as high as day three. ESPN has a mock draft up right now of the next two rounds, which has them early round three. If you look at some mock drafts, they have him all the way down in round seven, stuff like that. He's been really, it's been interesting to watch throughout the pre-draft process because he's risen up these draft boards a lot. He kind of went into the process as maybe a fringe guy in terms of late round or undrafted free agent. Obviously, he was dealing with an injury at the end of the season for the Tigers, but he's done really well throughout the pre-draft process, did well at the combine. And I think teams are excited about him. Obviously, he's 6'9", so that jumps off.
Yeah.
Even among offensive linemen, and he's got a real shot to be drafted later tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we will definitely keep our eyes on him. In Tiger football, spring practice has come to its conclusions. What have been your biggest takeaways from the conclusion of spring practice?
Yeah, obviously it was kind of weird the way it ended because they were supposed to do that Spring Fest event, and then the weather had to cancel it, so fans didn't get to see that type of an event and get to meet all the new players, which obviously that's kind of the biggest takeaway is you just go out there during practice and look at all the numbers and everybody is new almost, right? There's a couple guys who are returners, some guys who we think will play significant roles. But for the most part, this team is going to be made up entirely, you know, the contributors are made up entirely of transfers. And so spring was kind of trying to figure out who are those guys that are going to stand out. Obviously, we know some of them, especially the guys who played a lot for Southern Miss last year. But, yeah, I think there's still a lot to be worked out. I did my depth chart projection earlier this week, commercialpill.com. And a lot of that stuff is not set in stone, right? There's a lot to still be decided when they get into the summer.
Yeah. Would it be safe to say right now, obviously it's still very early, there's a long way to go before the regular season actually kicks off for college football, but is the job of quarterback Marcus Stokes to lose?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say exactly in terms of the perception within the building. I think when you look at the quarterback competition, it's kind of the same as, I feel the same about it as I did before spring practice, which is you look at experience. It's so important in these things, especially when there's really no time to waste, right? The first game of the season is a huge game against UNLV on the road. So there's no learning curve. There's no time for that for anybody because you need to be competitive in those games right off the bat. And obviously he has the experience from playing a lot of games. Now that was at the Division II level. So there's obviously the question of how it's going to translate. And obviously you go through the process and sometimes people stand out in these quarterback competitions that you didn't expect. And so definitely not done by any stretch of the imagination, but I think he, just because of that experience, has a leg up.
Yeah, you on Twitter yesterday posted something about how the Briarcrest pipeline to Memphis Athletics is not just for basketball, but it's in football too. What can you tell us about the offensive lineman Blake Adams coming out of Briarcrest that is committed to Memphis?
Yeah, it's kind of like a late one, obviously, a depth piece, kind of a walk-on in terms of someone who's going to come in, and just interesting because, yeah, like you said, it feels like everyone, if you're a Briarcrest and you're playing well, doesn't matter what sport it is, Tigers are going to be calling.
Yeah.
So it's been crazy over the past couple of weeks, obviously, Parker Frowns and Fred Smith Jr. for basketball. But yeah, you know, Charles Huff has talked about local recruiting. He's talked about how important it is, and Rodney Salisbury has been a huge part of that, joining the Tigers staff. And you're starting to see it, you know, throughout spring, a lot of guys visiting and a lot of recruiting going on in the Memphis area. And then you see it here, obviously, with somebody who's going to come in and join this roster.
Yeah. And then one last thing for you, because I found this incredibly interesting, but you did a little bit of a post and you broke down the story of Obafemi, who just beat Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, and how there's a little bit of a local tie to who Obafemi was before he went and took the wrestling route. Do you care to break down a little bit of how Memphis has a relation to his story?
Yeah, well, so I noticed, obviously, everyone's talking about Obafemi, huge win at WrestleMania, and they're talking about his stories about how he was at Alabama, right? And he was a shot putter. But, you know, you don't hear in that story that he actually started his career at Middle Tennessee before he transferred to Alabama. Obviously, as we know, everyone, you know, you do well, you transfer, and you go to a bigger school. So I was like, okay, well, that seems like they probably competed against Memphis when he was at MTSU. And lo and behold, looked it up, and his first ever meet, he competed in, there was a bunch of schools there, and he competed in the shot put, and he finished fourth, and the top three finishers were all from Memphis.
Wow.
So there's always a local angle, and how about that?
Yeah, that is really cool. I remember scrolling through my Twitter one day. I was like, man, that's a really cool piece. I'm glad I stumbled upon that and glad you covered it, because that's like two worlds colliding, because I love the WWE and love that entire story. So a huge shout out to you for covering that and breaking that down. That's really, really cool. But Jonah, that's all the time we have for today. Always a pleasure talking with you. Wolo's going to be back with us next Friday, but you have a good one, all right?
Yep, you as well.
All righty. That is our man, the Commercial Appeal beat writer for your Tiger football team. Man, time flies when you're having fun, huh, Darren? We've got all of our guys in the other room getting you ready for happy hour that's coming just up around the bend. Don't go anywhere. Happy hour with Johnny Radio. You've got Jared in the house. You've got Jahan, the historian. You've got Darren. You've got everybody here to talk
everybody
more about.
Except you. Why don't you hang around?
Well, I have things to do. I'm a busy, busy man. I can't be hanging around and doing all those kind of things, but I'm out of time. You guys stay blessed. You guys stay happy. And as always, it's going to be a good day.
Going to be a good day.
Hey, everybody. Are you ready to see the USA in a new all-star Chevrolet this summer? Well, Olive Branch has it all right here in one place. The new Traverse, Tahoe, and Suburban with third-row seating here in Olive Branch. New